This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
It is Monday, March 18th, 2024. We are going to be doing another episode here of The Current State of WWE as we are 2 weeks and change away from WrestleMania 40. Unbelievably, it just creeps up on you. And tonight we've got a couple of things that we're going to talk about. One side of this is going to be the men's side of things. And as you'd imagine, it's going to be Rock centered, but maybe we'll put a different twist on this. And then the other side of the coin is going to be about the women's division with Bayley. So I think we'll have a nice diverse conversation here. And welcome back, of course, every week. Anthony DeMarco is here to join us to talk about this as we are, man, just 2.5 weeks away from WrestleMania 40.
It's crazy how fast the calendar has flipped into WrestleMania season. And you see the cards start to be rounded out. And I mean, before we dive into The Rock and Cody and maybe eventually branch off into the women's side of things, how do you feel about the card with, 2.5 weeks out?
I feel pretty good. I mean, sure, we could have gotten Brock and Gunther, and then there's the Sammy debacle and people wanting Chad Gable. But I think ultimately that Gunther's going to have, as he always does, a phenomenal match with Sami Zayn. You've got the women's side of things with Becky and Rhea. That's a little underwhelming. We've gone over that before, and it still feels kind of blasé to me. Obviously the men's side of things with the World Heavyweight Championship that we talked about last week with Drew and Seth is a match that I think doesn't have a ton of people talking. It's everything seems to be about Rock, Roman, Seth, and Cody. But to me, this is a match that we really should keep our eye on. Of course, we got a floating Damian Priest around to see if and when he cashes in. We got LA Knight and AJ Styles that, to me, I think, even though he's not in a title match, it is a very good scenario for LA Knight to position himself on the card in a match with LA Knight. And there's not too many singles matches right now. The triple threat, of course, with Logan Paul and Kevin Owens and Randy Orton is, I think, going to be very exciting. So honestly, like, I look at the card and I'm good with it. I mean, there's improvements that I would like to make, absolutely. But I look up and down the card and I'm feeling like this is WrestleMania. I'm feeling like I'm ready to go. It's not perfect. I'm not a 10 out of 10 out of excitement, but I think I'm in a good place for WrestleMania. How about you?
Yep, I'm looking forward to it too. I like the high profile matches that have no title on the line. As you alluded to, LA Knight versus AJ Styles. I know that a lot of people had LA Knight penciled in for the United States Championship, but I do think that they've done maybe not a poor job of building this, because I am invested in AJ Styles and LA Knight, and they've certainly built it for several months, but maybe just I would have liked a bit more screen time. I think I saw a stat today that LA Knight has had like a minute and a half of screen time since Elimination Chamber. And I know that on SmackDown, it is a shorter show. You're trying to cram everything in. And like, if you take away the Bloodline segments, you basically have an hour and a half to play with the rest of the card. But I think that LA Knight being positioned against a seasoned veteran like AJ Styles is arguably more important. And look at AJ Styles, his first two WrestleManias with WWE, or in general, there is no other WrestleMania, but his first two WrestleManias were non-title matches. The first against Chris Jericho, the second against Shane McMahon. So, I mean, maybe that's kind of something that they're like kind of like good. What's the word I'm looking for? I guess apropos, if that's what it is, if that's the correct term. But I'm not too disappointed with much. I'm interested to see how a 6-team ladder match will go. I don't think I've ever seen a 12-person match as far as ladders are involved. And I mean, I am still waiting to see what happens with Bianca Belair. 2.5 weeks out, I really hope she isn't saddled with the Women's Battle Royal. And you and I have both been vocal about the fact that we would want her to be in Becky's spot. So I think the only thing at this point that I'm kind of discouraged about is Bianca Belair's placement or lack thereof.
Yeah, right now, but they have to be positioning her one-on-one against somebody. We all believe it's Jade Cargill. I think it is too. There's just no other position for her right now. And you wouldn't put somebody who's one of the faces of the 2K brand this year and not have them have a one-on-one match. It's almost guaranteed. So I think Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair are going to be featured. I think that's a very good matchup, at least visually. We'll see how it is in execution, given the body type and how similar they are. And, you know, it's going to be power versus power, and it's going to be a fun match, you would hope. So that'll be fun. And you're right. I mean, having a 12-person match, that's almost half of a Royal Rumble in a ladder match at once. Like, it's like ridiculous. So, I mean, it's ridiculous in the sense there's so many people. It may work out just fine, but boy, I don't envy having to call that match. There's going to be so much going on all the time. I mean, it's going to be exhausting to call it. And it is going to be a car crash in the best possible way. And I think that it ultimately will probably have an early prediction, probably the Miz and Awesome Truth, or Miz and R-Truth win it and have Judgment Day lose. But again, early call. We don't know the rest of the team. So, yeah, overall, I mean, it is exciting. There are some mysterious people that are off, like Bobby Lashley, who has really fallen off the radar as of late. You know, Santos Escobar doesn't have a match yet, and he's been a nice addition and a really good heel turn that's cooled off because of a lack of attention. But to your point with LA Knight, I mean, yeah, he's gotten almost no screen time, but boy, his pop this past week was a lot of fun to listen to. It seems like he still has the fans, not at the level he did with Roman Reigns, but given the fact that they've almost given him no screen time, he still has a hell of a connection with the fans. So even post-Mania, and, you know, maybe in a future episode, we can talk about this before 40's over, is what about post WrestleMania? What does the post WrestleMania 40 landscape look like? You know, because so many people are just going to 40 and not discussing beyond. So as I'm thinking about it, maybe we can remember next week or the week after before 40 to use that as one of our discussion points. But to focus specifically and kind of hone in on one of our topics tonight, Cody Rhodes, and, you know, has been obviously and should be rightfully, with the being the Royal Rumble winner, the focal point of Raw and SmackDown. Now he's going to be on SmackDown next week with Roman there. No Rock. Rock appears to be totally done until WrestleMania 40, unless there's a surprise appearance. They want to bring him in, whatever. And we obviously had that amazing Rock concert. And we have Cody Rhodes, who is, you know, crying now on TV, or pretending to cry on TV, and Rock made fun of him for it. But to your question that we talked about before the show started, does this feel more like Cody versus The Rock than it does Cody versus Roman Reigns? And I'll let you take the first crack at that.
It's starting to feel like that, right? Because they haven't really done much to develop the rivalry between Roman and Cody directly. Ever since that press event, it's mainly been building Rock versus Cody. So much so that Cody even challenged The Rock to a one-on-one match. And I haven't really, like, even Roman Reigns specifically, there hasn't been much substance to any of his promos, like, to actually further along the story. Like, yes, he's cut some funny lines, he's done his greatest hits with Acknowledge Me and Tribal Chief and all that. But Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, I find, in this particular program, have almost kind of taken a back seat. And maybe that's because you're trying to make the people care about this new heel version of The Rock, which is understandable, but at what cost? Which is weird, right? Because for 3.5-4 years, we had been talking about, well, at what cost are you going to position Roman Reigns as the end-all be-all in WWE? It's good content, but what are you sacrificing? And now it kind of feels like Roman Reigns, and by extension his feud with Cody Rhodes, is being sacrificed a little bit. And I'm almost starting to think, like, are they building more towards the tag team match on the first night than the main event of the second night for the Undisputed Championship? And you should never feel that the Undisputed Championship, or you could argue that any championship, should be playing second fiddle to a non-title tag team match. And obviously there's a lot on the line for the tag team match. You have the four biggest stars in the injury involved. Seth Rollins, as the other world champion, is like right in the thick of things. So it isn't a traditional everyday tag match. But I just feel like, and again, this I said this last week, that the execution of everything they're doing gets me interested in the moment. I'm still loving all of this. But when I take a step back and I look kind of the macro view and the direction, I'm saying to myself, like, Man, are we forgetting about the Undisputed Championship match between Cody and Roman? Because at times I often do.
It's a fair point. And The Rock, every time he's there, does suck the energy and the oxygen out of the room. And not a bad way. He's the damn Rock who's killing it with this character that I think is one of the best, diversions or I can't think of the word. The
versions.
There you go. It's one of the best versions of The Rock that we've seen. And I've argued maybe ever out of any of his characters. Yes, it's a Hollywood Rock, but it's kind of an evolved version of The Rock. Even beyond the 2003 version that we didn't even get that long. I loved his music. Let me just ask you that quick. You got to ask, do you like that new version of his music that starts out like it's the typical version of, you know, The Rock from 15 years that we've seen it to Hollywood Rock? Did you enjoy that?
I really did, because it came out of nowhere. Literally, like it just like it was like an RKO out of nowhere. And when the beat kind of dropped, I think in the back you kind of heard like an old version of like The Rock says, like, and then it leaned into the 2003 Hollywood version of The Rock, and or that theme song rather. And we spoke about it last week, I believe, that like it's almost like a Pavlovian reaction that when you hear the classic rock music, people will cheer. And you still have the classic intro of If You Smell, which will spark that reaction. But when it comes down into, like, I think it's actually called It's Conquered, this version, and it gets to like that slow beat and he can slowly saunter to the ring instead of his typical up pace tempo, it really kind of set the entire tone. And look, people were still freaking out. I was watching it with my buddy and we both marked out like we were 10 years old again because of how awesome it was with the lightning bolt. So yeah, I'm really liking it, and it certainly adds to the character.
I loved it. I saw some reaction videos. People were freaking out. I mean, and I understand why. I didn't jump around, but I did. I marked out as well. And it's that moment that you feel like a kid again, like you said, because it was what, how many years ago? 21 years ago, we got that theme. And it's a little bit of a remix, but that's fine with me. The only thing I would add is before they transition from his current to that beat drop, I would just do like is cooking.
Yeah,
and then exactly. From like the old version. So we'll see if that gets added or if anything else continues, because his entrance every week has kind of evolved a little bit. And I'm liking it. The lightning bolts are awesome. Typically, that kind of stuff looks cheesy. I love it. The Rock is just, I mean, he even smiled. You heard the crowd pop when that music hit. I mean, he just loved it. And he played a babyface this week. He can kind of do whatever he wants. I think people are enjoying this more than they even thought they would. Even the people that hated The Rock for stepping in on Cody's toes are loving this. So this is being positioned perfectly for a Rock babyface turn, an official all the way turn for The Rock at some point. He can even keep this character. He doesn't need to go back to that version that he was, over so many years. So, but back to the original focus here, I think that Cody Rhodes and the Rock does feel like something that it's been focused on, but with The Rock there, you kind of have to build to that tag team match, because if he's not going to be there the final 3 weeks before WrestleMania, you don't have a whole lot of time to build with The Rock. You got to make the most of it. So I think given they have 3 shows of SmackDown left, there's a lot they could still do with Cody and Roman, as long as Roman's freaking there. Like, Roman needs to be there. No excuses, no ifs, ands, or buts. He needs to be there the next 3 weeks, because they can do like video packages leading into an interview, leading into maybe even a Rock Austin type of sit down interview in the back, like they did before WrestleMania 17. There's a lot they could do in 3 weeks time to get us much more focused on Rock, or rather Cody and Roman Reigns. And I think that just with a little bit of promo time and some video packages, nobody needs to attack each other. It's just straight up promo and getting Paul and Heyman involved. I think they could really kind of change that feeling around in just 3 weeks time.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, the execution of everything has been hitting out of the park. I the only thing I will say is I think it's gone on a bit too long. Like the Rock concert, I found like it dragged. Like, I feel like every segment with the Rock could be shaved. Like, you could shave off 5 minutes, but that's me nitpicking. But I do like, I understand you had to invest a lot of time and a lot of, screen time, not to sound redundant, into developing this Rock character, this new version, getting people to understand it, care about it. So that had to come at the sacrifice of Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, because we already have that built-in story between Roman and Cody. you have the built-in story between Seth and Roman and Seth and Cody, who are also featured on Monday Night Raw. So they're getting like double screen time some weeks. So I completely understand that you had to give The Rock the most screen time and the most mic time to develop this newfound character. But this was always the inherent risk when you were going to shoehorn The Rock into the main event, was that it was going to have to come at the sacrifice of something else. And in this instance, it has been Roman Reigns. Not so much Cody, because like I just said, Cody has a home on Monday Night Raw, but it's come of Roman Reigns. And the only thing is, like, it's not that I'm upset that The Rock is getting this spot, but it's almost like it's given Roman Reigns like a pass not to be there. Like, look over here, we have The Rock now, and it's going to completely excuse the fact that our world champion isn't at every single SmackDown a month out from WrestleMania. And it's not acceptable. Like, Roman Reigns, I saw a stat that The Rock has had more TV appearances in 2024 than Roman Reigns. Like, are you serious? The Rock has been on TV more than the world champion. The most popular star in the world, the owner and founder of multiple businesses, whether it be tequila, he just launched like a skin product, the XFL, Zoa, whatever it is, and he's been on TV more than Roman Reigns. So maybe it's not necessarily a criticism of The Rock, because I have loved the execution, but it's more maybe me just once again driving home the fact that you gotta get that title off of Roman Reigns.
And, well, I think you brought up a good point, because The Rock has been a great deodorizer for the constant problem of Roman not being there. I mean, because no one's even talking about it. I've even been distracted by it because of how big of a star The Rock is. It feels like a big deal when he's there. He's been entertaining as hell. Sure, his segments have been a little long, I agree. But it's The Rock, so you like exactly. You kind of let it go. You know. But I agree, it is a little long in the tooth. But you have Roman Reigns, who's not there and continues to not be there. But people have been distracted with good reason. And not even realize that, oh, wow, wait a minute. WrestleMania 40 is how many weeks away? And we still don't have Roman on nearly every show. This is and it's just unacceptable, period. There's just no reason for it. I don't want to hear that, well, it's built into his contract. No, you can always adjust and amend contracts and pay him more to be there. And it'd be worth that investment, no doubt. So they also need to get it straight. Is it the Universal Championship? Is it the WWE? They've changed names now. Again, I don't know if anyone else has noticed this. Like, The Rock has just landed on Universal. I think the announcer, Corey Graves, called it the WWE Universal Championship. But then some people call it the WWE. Like, we need to land on a name. It needs to be just the Undisputed Championship. Can we all just agree that it should just be the Undisputed, i.e. from 2002? Can we just pretend? I mean, I don't know. So, but outside of those little nitpicks, I mean... yeah, now it's time. It is time to focus on Cody and Roman Reigns. It's time for promos. It's time for video packages. It's time for the battle of the promos between Roman and Cody. Sure, I mean, I guess they could do physicality, but that's what this needs. It needs a kick in the ass, because it's all about night one. You're like, oh, wait a minute, that's right. These guys are going to have a championship match on night two to close the show. And it all is but guaranteed that Cody's going to win, especially when The Rock said, you are not going to get another opportunity. I'll make sure it happens if you lose. So that's kind of like, oh, well, that's like, you know, for sure Cody winning. That just ices the cake. But hey, I think overall this has been a resounding success. Despite our criticisms about the evolution of this program, I think it has been a success up to this point. And now I'm really looking forward to Cody and Roman and the story from last year and Paul Heyman's words and that kind of thing. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm still of the belief it's probably going to be Bloodline Rules. When it all is said and done, they're probably going to want that creative freedom to make it Bloodline Rules, even if that's not obviously the best option.
No, 100%. And it always leaves that door to be opened of overbooking. But there is that fine line where you could, quote, overbook it, but just to the right level. And look, you have three SmackDowns, to your point, right? We have three SmackDowns before WrestleMania. You have three SmackDowns to completely invest in Cody and Roman and rekindling that magic and rekindling that story. Because I think at this point, you have a reason to be invested as to why Seth is involved. You have a reason to be invested as to why The Rock is involved. And you've put in a lot of legwork into developing that character, giving him enough mic time, giving him enough screen time, in addition to his social media posts. And for Seth, you also have him now be freed up to develop his program against Drew McIntyre. So you have three SmackDowns now to hone in directly on Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. And that's more than enough time because, to your point, they did this a lot. They did this dance last year. And last year, there was no tag match on night one. There was no Seth. There was no Roman. So they don't have to develop as much. There's the built-in story. The groundwork's already been laid. There's already that bad blood between the two. So just because at this point we can nitpick here and there doesn't mean that it's the end of the road. They've kind of really mapped out this thing properly and gave The Rock maybe the first nine. And now on the back nine, you can invest completely into Roman and Cody Rhodes. Because like you said, even if The Rock doesn't appear on television between now and WrestleMania, I think that they've done what they've had to do, right? Like if The Rock doesn't show up until night one, do you think that would hurt them at all? Or do you think at this point they've done enough to investing and developing into his character that people should be invested no matter what?
I think people are invested no matter what. The only backlash are going to be from live audiences that cross their fingers that The Rock's going to be there and surprise, you know, in a surprise fashion that he's going to be there. Oh, he's been on the SmackDown. He's been on SmackDown the last few weeks. You kind of get used to him being there. And all of a sudden, wait, he's not in my city. I have to sit and watch on a Titantron. So you're going to have some annoyed like live crowds for the next 3 weeks that they don't get The Rock. Now, it's possible he shows up the final SmackDown before and they decide to change things. But I don't need The Rock. In fact, I'm reluctant to say we don't need The Rock or want The Rock right now because he's done everything he needs to do to build to that tag match. He said everything he needs to say, everything through Twitter, which has been, I mean, like every time he talks, it's 15 to 20 minutes now. We've gotten everything we need to hear and see from him. So I think that they could run video packages for the next 3 weeks and we'd be just fine with it because the focus should be on the damn title match that the fans said that they wanted over Rock Roman. This is what you said you wanted. So let's build to the match that we wanted for WrestleMania 40. The story's there. Like you said, it's just building on last year. Now, what does this mean to Cody? What is he going to do to mitigate the bloodline rules? What is he going to do if he fails the tag team match? What is his plan? Does he hint that he has friends in the business, quote unquote, which would lead to maybe an Austin, maybe a Cena, maybe all those things that, like you said, it's a very fine line in overbooking there, but like, what's his plan? What's his plan to make sure that the bloodline, if he wins the tag match, actually abide by those rules and we don't have some funky way of them finding a loophole through it? I mean, those kinds of things you can address. So I think Cody Rhodes has some material to work with. Now, he also is going to be on Raw. So don't forget, he's not just coming to be on SmackDown maybe the next 3 weeks, at least next week. But he's also got Monday Night Raw to sit and talk about it. And maybe we get a surprise appearance from Roman there. I mean, we keep thinking it's only one way where Cody could go to SmackDown. What if Cody's on Raw in the next 3 weeks? He's in a match ending the show and some kind of main event. And we have Roman Reigns, come back and beat him down. The bloodline beats him down on Raw. I mean, we keep thinking the bloodline can't ever appear on Raw, but I guess they could.
Yeah, no, they have that creative freedom now, especially with the, you could have The Rock playing on the fact that he's on the board of directors to get them over to Monday Night Raw, or Paul Heyman as the special counsel pulling strings. Like, I really think that they have enough shows here to completely get us reinvested into Cody and Roman Reigns. And in my opinion, I think that they have a possibility here to make us more invested in this match than their match a year ago. Because a year ago, it did kind of feel a bit forced. It did kind of feel a bit predictable. But now I'm thinking to myself, like, because of the wrinkle of the bloodline the night one, it's almost got me wanting this match more, which I never thought I would have said. Like, maybe this was their plan. Like, maybe I'm giving all this criticism, but it was all by design to get me wanting Cody versus Roman. Because maybe they sensed a bit of apathy from some fans towards Cody versus Roman because of maybe how predictable it perhaps was, or some fans not being completely behind Cody or being sick of Roman Reigns. So maybe The Rock and Seth's heavy involvement through the last month or so was a way to really get people like you and I, or maybe me more specifically, into caring about this one-on-one match. So the more we kind of talk it out here, the more I just have to give them their flowers and say they've really knocked this out of the park.
No doubt about it. I mean, we cannot like the Cody character, but still be excited for the story. I mean, like, not him finishing his story, but at least recognize when a story is really well told. Like, those two things can be true at the same time. And I think that that's what's happening here. Despite the fact we despise the babyface character, they've done a nice job of building sympathy for Cody, of bringing his family, as always, into the story. The fans seem to be on board with it all the way here. They haven't floundered with his support at all since he debuted at WrestleMania 38 against Seth 2 years ago. I just don't want to hear one person after Cody wins that championship say, oh, that was predictable. That was stupid. That was I don't want to hear anyone say that. I don't want to hear anybody who has been bitching about the Roman Reigns run or the Cody Rhodes being screwed last year. And, you know, WWE tried to screw him again this year if it wasn't for the fans. I don't want to hear one person, if he wins and should win the belt from Roman, say, man, I would have loved it if it wasn't so predictable. That's nonsense. Like that is the one time you don't get that pass, because this is what everyone has wanted forever, and it will end the run of Roman Reigns. So you can't have both of those things. You can't bitch about Roman's run that he needs to drop it, then also bitch that, oh, well, it was a, you know, it was so predictable that Cody Rhodes won that, you know?
Have you seen any of these, I guess, not reports, but maybe fan boards that suggest that people regret all that vitriol of forcing Cody Rhodes into the main event because of how much they're liking the heel version of The Rock and how badly received Cody Rhodes crying on Monday Night Raw was last week? And it's like, you know, I still don't think it was the bad decision, because now after seeing heel Rock, I don't know if I would have wanted to see babyface classic Dwayne Johnson Rock versus Roman Reigns. Because I had been saying for a bit that I was getting a little sick of The Rock's just cookie cutter greatest hits promos, the ones that he did against Austin Theory and Jinder Mahal. So I had been saying I wanted a heel version of The Rock for quite some time. But for a lot of fans, like, I wonder, like, is there any regret, you think, into all that vitriol and like kind of forcing WWE to pivot if in fact that they were going with Rock versus Roman in the early stages?
No, I think really, even if I was a Cody crybaby and I was the one complaining, and then I'm so proud of myself for them being, you know, of collectively putting our voices together and forcing WWE to change their plans. And I'm like, hooray, we did it. But now we've got a Rock that's more over. Well, it's a win-win here. I don't see a losing side. I really don't see, even for people on the other side, like you and me, who wanted Rock versus Roman, albeit now that we've seen what awesome version of The Rock we're getting in 2020 hindsight, we can all say, oh man, thank God we didn't, you know, I didn't know if I wanted that version of The Rock that we've gotten for 15 years. But if we got it, we wouldn't have known that this version existed still. So like, we wouldn't have known what we didn't know. And we wouldn't have known that they would have dared turn The Rock heel and gotten this brilliance that we've seen now. So we would have just been accepting, and maybe it would have still been okay with the buildup and his insults that we've heard for 15 years of this version of The Rock. And that's fine. We've all been like, hey, it's a mega match. This is a mega match. Look, it's family. It's head of the table on the line, you know, all that, all that. Like, we probably would have accepted it given the magnitude of the match. But in hindsight, I think that what the Cody fans have done is actually given us the best version of The Rock we could have possibly gotten. You're getting the match that I actually think is a better story match in Cody versus Roman, giving us a much better chance of Roman dropping the belt than if Rock faced him. And you're also giving us still, we're going to get Rock and Roman down the line, probably at WrestleMania 41 or maybe SummerSlam. I mean, so it's still happening. Everything we want is still happening, except we're getting an ultra entertaining Rock. You're going to get Cody versus Roman. Everyone seems to be happy. I mean, I just don't see the downside to what's happened. And I didn't think that this was possible, which is, like you said, why I need to just kind of, like you said, give the respect where it's due and give WWE credit for everything that they've been able to maneuver so far.
Do you think that there's any possibility that this was their plan all along? Or do you think originally they were going just for babyface Rock versus Roman?
You know, that is, I mean, you and I have talked about it, how does it really matter? But it kind of does in WWE trying to give themselves credit for this, because they'll never admit that this wasn't their plan until, you know, maybe later in a documentary, you'll hear it from Triple H or, you know, one of the creative Tom or Bruce Pritchard or somebody. You know, that's possible. We'll eventually know. But in the moment, they would never admit that they didn't want to do this, until they did it and go, wow, this is a much better idea. I think originally they meant for just babyface Rock versus Roman. That was, and they tested the waters with the original promo of The Rock saying, maybe I'll go out to a bar and sit in a booth, and maybe I will sit at the head of the table, and the crowd went crazy. And then they said, okay, full steam ahead. And let's take the next step. And Rock comes out, and now the infamous version of edition of SmackDown where he comes out and supersedes Cody. Cody steps aside. He has that kind of awkward handshake. And then everybody's like feeling bad for Cody. That moment turned the whole thing. But I don't think they meant to do that, because it was supposed to be Cody going, okay, I understand, being that kind of just nice guy that he is. And he walks up the ramp, and we're all still enamored with Rock and Roman until the backlash on Twitter started. So I don't think that this was the plan, because there's too many possibilities of the fans not going along with you along the way. There's too many twists and turns. You're overcomplicating it if this was the original plan. So I think it was just, no, I don't think it was.
So one thing that you've said a lot is that Rock, Roman, or not every big match needs to happen at WrestleMania. And I think a lot of people forget that, you know, Randy Orton's first world championship came at SummerSlam. Rock versus Brock came at SummerSlam. Like, do you think that this is a slam dunk for WrestleMania next year? Or do you think there's a possibility through all of this that we could see the Rock versus Roman Reigns in SummerSlam? Because for me, I'm thinking that the Rock has committed to a year, probably all the way until WrestleMania 41, and then he hangs them up. But I'm wondering, like, what they actually have planned here. Who will be the babyface? Because the other part about this is like, The Rock is so awesome right now as a heel. Could you turn him back babyface after only 3 months? Like, I know that the story would traditionally probably be better with The Rock as the babyface and Roman as a heel. But I'm thinking to myself, like, man, like, I don't know if I want to see a babyface version of The Rock anymore.
I don't think they would. Honestly, okay, so two questions there. I wouldn't change The Rock at all. He's getting a massive reaction, and he got cheered this week, and the fans were going along with it. And he was just himself that he's been, other than insulting the crowd. But the crowd almost laughs every time he does it, because it's almost like a term of endearment when he does it, because it's so funny telling people to go smoke crack and being in the largest collection of trailer park trash he's ever said. Like, that kind of stuff is hilarious. It's not truly personally insulting. So I honestly don't think that they should change a thing from his music to his outfits. They found a brilliant formula of this version of The Rock in 2024 that still gets a massive reaction. I wouldn't change him back to that kind of vanilla version of him and, you know, just a cut off black tee and going back to the original music. I would keep this version that's working and just have Roman beat him down after WrestleMania, after they lose their tag team match, after Roman maybe drops the belt, the bloodline completely turns on The Rock, beats him down. And what I've heard is, as far as when this happens, apparently The Rock has a, if this is true, it seems this isn't coming from just one source, it seems many, that The Rock has a movie he's filming from May to August. So there'll be a 3 or 4 month chunk of time that he won't be able to do anything in the ring, or if he does, it's like promo stuff sending in it, or not actually in ring. So if that's true, that means there's no SummerSlam. If there's no SummerSlam, that means it's only WrestleMania after that. So if that's what I'm hearing. So it doesn't seem like SummerSlam, as I'm thinking about it, is even a possibility if he's filming a movie in the middle of the summer.
Side note, do you not feel like SummerSlam has had the wind taken out of its sails over the last 10 years or so?
Well, they're trying to make it stadium shows. I mean, the stadium, they're trying to make it the SummerSlam or the WrestleMania of the summer, right? That they're trying to. I guess, in what way do you feel it has?
Well, like, look, like, I remember when I was a kid, right? Like, the first SummerSlam I ever watched was SummerSlam 2000 of Triple H versus The Rock versus Kurt Angle for the WWF Championship. And there was, like, that underlying story of Kurt Angle versus Triple H, with Stephanie McMahon making it the love triangle. Then 2001, you have The Rock defeat Booker T for the WCW Championship and Kurt Angle versus Stone Cold Steve Austin for the WWF Championship. 2002, you have The Rock versus Brock Lesnar, one of the biggest matches of all time. Then in 2003, you have the second ever Elimination Chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship with Goldberg and Kevin Nash. I believe that was Kevin Nash's last match ever in WWE. HBK, Jericho, Triple H, Shawn Michaels. Oh, I said that twice. Randy Orton, sorry. 2004, you have Randy Orton win his first ever World Championship against Chris Benoit. All this to say is that I felt that back then it legitimately did feel like the WrestleMania of the summer. And Royal Rumble was almost in third place at times, I guess, a matter of preference. But there were big match feels at SummerSlam. And I just feel like now, and it's not like this every year, like obviously you have Suplex City of Brock versus John Cena a decade ago in 2014, but I feel like every single SummerSlam, you don't have that big fight feel. Like, yeah, Brock versus Roman Reigns in the street fight was certainly awesome, or it was last man standing, actually. But this past year, I thought it was a very big letdown, arguably one of the worst Triple H shows since he took over of Head of Creative. And just year over year, I don't feel that like big fight important feel around SummerSlam, given the matches and the storylines going in.
I see. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just the general feeling we used to have for SummerSlam versus what it is now.
Exactly.
And what I think they're trying to do, I mean, again, they're trying to apply a WrestleMania formula to a pay-per-view that's not WrestleMania. And they're trying to say, well, more people there means it's a bigger show. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a better show. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to feel like it's a better show just because more people are there. It brings a certain energy. It brings a certain feel to the show that I should feel like this is bigger because there are more people here. But that doesn't always apply and hasn't applied throughout the decades of WWE, where you could have knockout shows in a 20,000 person arena or even a 10,000 person arena. And it doesn't need to be that always stadium shows are the biggest shows, because as you said, this past SummerSlam, that I remember that. I remember thinking to myself, this is the first event Triple H has been in charge of solely that I come out going, that was not great. It was eh. Like I come out and I gave it like a, I think it was like a C-. I was like, that was not good. And you know, obviously you're going to have those moments. I'm not blaming Triple H, but sometimes it's also the fact that you just don't have the right storylines reaching a boiling point at the right time. Sometimes you kind of just throw people together that you may be rushing a story that you wanted to save, or, you know, just to fill up the card, or just the execution of the story hasn't gone as planned. It just happens. You know, I think that though right now we have the best roster that we've had since the Ruthless Aggression era. I know that's a common take, but I think it's true. At the same time, you look back at those 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, and so on. Those were all-star rosters, as we all know, coming out of the greatest era that many people believe it was, from Attitude into Ruthless Aggression, that you had all those mega stars out of, you know, really, like, you couldn't probably put a roster together better than that, and maybe we'll never see it again. But it was a different time. But you're right. It's really not about how many people are there that they're trying to make us feel like it's the biggest party of the summer. It's about the stories. It's about the just basics, the things that never change. It's emotional investment. It's how good are the stories? How good are the characters? How good are the damn matches when they finally get together and have the blow off? So it's really a lot of those things that matter, and not necessarily the size of the stadium.
Yeah, so as we kind of get up against the clock here, I don't want to breeze by the WWE Women's Championship of Bayley versus Io Sky. We obviously see the beatdown on SmackDown this past week. In the main event slot, I thought that was really good booking and writing on Triple H's part. I think you really have to invest in making this feel important. To your point, she was the women's champion. She was the Women's Royal Rumble winner. So just kind of by default or tradition, she should take a kind of precedence over that of what's going on Monday Night Raw with Becky and Rhea Ripley. But have you been happy with the development of this program, with the involvement of Dakota Kai and her double turn on Bayley? Like, how have you felt about this going in, and what's your interest level like?
I would say my interest level at first was very low, and not because Bayley turning babyface wasn't interesting. It's something that's absolutely needed for her. She's been in a backseat for too long. She's too good to be in that backseat position for that long. And she's essentially been in prison since she created that group in story, since SummerSlam 2 years ago. She's been imprisoned, and it felt like she has always taken a back seat. We haven't seen the best version. That group has been at times just kind of just groan worthy, where it's just like, can this group please break up? We're done with this. And they just kept pushing along with it. And now, you know, after the turn happened on Bayley, I felt, okay, here we go. I had just kind of an interest in it, and it has grown over the weeks. But up until the last couple of weeks, I didn't really have too much interest in this. And the fact that it main evented SmackDown sends a message to the fans. Hey, we know the women's division exists here. We're going to pay attention to our Royal Rumble winner and her match at WrestleMania here. And I think they're doing a nice job. They're putting a ton of sympathy on Bayley. She has a little bit of help from Naomi, who finally has something to do from since her return. But, you know, she's going to need more help to balance out the number game here with, you know, the four members of Damage Control. Ultimately, though, my interest is growing at a steady pace. not in a rocket ship type of trajectory, but in a kind of slow but steady progression that I hope they continue for the next 3 weeks. Bayley right now needs to cut a scathing promo. She needs to find that fire. I don't want to see her anymore in the backstage interviews, which are effective, but I want to see her like a fiery promo from Bayley. I don't want to see any more of these kind of melodramatic ones. I'm ready for a fired up Bayley. I'm ready for some support from the women backstage from her. And I think it's also putting a lot of good heat on Damage Control. And I had this conversation last night with Rocky T that, you know, I think that Bayley leaving the group was the best thing, not for Bayley, but also just for Bayley, but also for Damage Control. Because with Bayley, it almost feels better without her in the group, just as a group. They feel much more, I don't know, solidified in a way, and it got too convoluted. So I think they're doing a nice job, and I hope it continues over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just because of Bayley, people are invested. I can speak to myself just because in my opinion, she's the most interesting women character on the roster right now, with the exception of Rhea Ripley, especially with Bianca Belair taking a backseat and Charlotte being injured and Jade Cargill still not having been featured on television aside from the Royal Rumble. And just Bayley's kind of organically gotten over in like an endearing way, even as a heel. In the Taylor end, well, just right up until the Royal Rumble. But I do think that you have to put more of an effort into trying to get her over in like beyond just like the organic love for her. Like, why do we care? Why is this important? Do you draw on the fact that like you were the longest reigning women's champion? I think she had like some record that she set before dropping the title in the fall of 2020. So I think that they had some leeway and they had some goodwill built in just because of the fans' love for Bayley. But I also think you need to find a reason to care about Io Sky as champion and not just Damage Control, because this feels like Bayley versus Damage Control and not Bayley versus Io Sky. And I think that the turn that they had with Dakota Kai, who I am expecting to turn back in some way, I'm just expecting that, I feel like that almost hurt this a bit, because you just wanted the heavies of the Kabuki Warriors neutralized so you could zero in on Bayley versus Io. But with Dakota turning and joining the group, it just kind of added to the fact of that it's kind of like Bayley versus the Damage Control. And maybe that's the language barrier, because Io and her can't really spar one-on-one on the mic. But I just really want them to focus it on Bayley versus Io and kind of drop the Damage Control stuff.
You know what I think they could do, as I'm thinking about it, is implement the Seth Rollins and Shinsuke Nakamura dynamic. I think that, you know, and they have a little bit with the subtitles with Damage Control speaking, but eliminate Dakota Kai, Io Sky, or I'm sorry, Dakota Kai, Kairi Sane, and Asuka. Get rid of them. Just and have her just speak, Io Sky speak to Bayley with the subtitles. It was extremely effective with Shinsuke. It rejuvenated his entire career, really. And Seth and Shinsuke were able to have a very respectable, fun program. And I think they could implement that formula to some degree with Bayley and Io Sky that we know is effective. And I think it's a way to get us invested that you said, as you said, there are so many other players and characters in this group. And now you got Naomi helping her out. It does feel kind of like Bayley is going to have a 4-on-4 tag team match instead of a 1-on-1 with Io Sky at WrestleMania. You know, it's just like, oh, I just need to find two more partners. And instead, it should be focused on Io Sky versus Bayley 1-on-1. And I hope, again, it's not over yet. I think just like with Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, that's been diluted a little bit with The Rock and the tag team match. They now have 3 weeks to focus on the 1-on-1 match that it should be, because that's what's happening at WrestleMania. We're not getting a tag team match with these women at WrestleMania. It's 1-on-1. So can we focus on these two women specifically? And sure, the group is going to continue to beat her down, and that's fine. But you can at least do the promo part of it with the 1-on-1s, even though there's a language barrier. We know the formula to get over that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like we still have 3 weeks to go here, and 3 weeks is a lot. And if you remove The Rock off of SmackDown, even if you have Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, like you probably chop that, you know, time slot in maybe by, you know, 33%. Like I think 15-20 minutes for Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, and probably 25% of that is going to be Roman's entrance, I think is enough. And you have some other things that you need to develop here, like the Bayley and like the Bayley storyline, obviously, that we just went over. I heard some rumblings that there's going to be like a street fight between Karrion Kross and Bobby Lashley. And I really like both these groups. We've spoken about our like for or our love for Karrion Kross, or maybe not love, but just appreciation. But I find the build hasn't been great, especially since they brought back the Authors of Pain with Paul Ellering. But I think they've been, that storyline specifically has taken the most shrapnel from The Rock and the Bloodline. So maybe with The Rock being off TV, you can invest more into that. I think LA Knight and AJ Styles deserve more of that investment. The tag team qualification matches seem to be living more so on Monday Night Raw, which would make sense because they do have that extra hour. So you have three SmackDowns here with no Rock to really invest into some of these storylines that don't have a lot of traction at this moment. And I think the one first and foremost should be the Women's Championship.
And combined, when you think about how much time The Rock has taken up on the show between video packages and actual in-ring segments, over those 3 weeks, you could easily get back an hour and a half of time. I mean, like, you really almost could. It's almost an additional show of SmackDown in time back that otherwise would have been taken up if The Rock was there. So, yeah, this extra time that with The Rock not there, I think is going to be very beneficial for programs like you said, if Karrion Kross and Bobby Lashley come up with some kind of, and it'll probably be a pre-show match, but nonetheless, a match at WrestleMania, they could do that. You know, obviously the Street Profits don't have anything going on. Maybe they'll have a tag team match with the Final Judgment or the Final Testament. So I think that you could have that be a beneficiary, as well as Bayley and Io Sky. And of course, Roman and Cody one-on-one. So yeah, we're going to get back to kind of a normal SmackDown for the next 3 weeks to see what and who they focus on with no Rock to take up 30 minutes a show. Is going to be beneficial. And yeah, you're hearing a lot of rumblings too backstage of the talent being angry about The Rock there. And which is, every time you hear and see that, you know, it comes with the territory that, oh, the legends come in and they take up the time that we spent all year trying to get. And it's, I get it, but you hear it every time. And then that The Rock is cussing and we can't cuss and wham, wham, wham. I'm sorry. I hear just a bunch of babies. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, it's just like, if that upsets you, not to cut you off, no, then ahead. Just be better. I'm sorry. Money draws. He draws. Does he have rules that are different? Of course he does. I remember Vince McMahon remember the build to Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar in 2018, and Roman Reigns went like back into Gorilla and was cussing at Vince McMahon and really just reaming him out for saying that Brock has special privileges. And then Vince had like a quick interview and he's just like, does Brock have special privileges? Yeah, he does, because he's Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Like, why would, and I'll just use these two as an example because I just brought them up as two who have probably taken the hardest hit. Why should Bobby Lashley and, to a much lesser extent, Karrion Kross get the same leeway as The Rock? Like, yeah. I'm sorry, but like, and I like those two wrestlers. I like that program. I think that if you invested more time into it, there is something there with both those groups. But I am sorry. Am I upset that Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits versus the Final Testament isn't getting enough time because they're giving it to The Rock and Roman Reigns and the Bloodline? No, I'm not. And those guys don't draw. So, I mean, does he get special privileges? Of course he does. Does he have more leeway language-wise? Of course he does. But he's The Rock. The same reason why Brock Lesnar came in and was champion, or John Cena, or whatever. Like, I'm sorry. Like you said, it's just it's just babies.
I'm sorry. And I understand it, though. I understand the frustration of just, you're there all the time. And then this guy comes in, he gets 30 minutes a show and all the talk is about him. And you know, he's going to take a main event spot for two nights and all the, and again, I understand the frustration, but also, like you said, it's just jealousy. Number one, it's just jealousy. When you boil it down, it's simply jealousy. And also, if you think that you need to cuss to be better, then you aren't understanding what it means to be better and how to get better. If you're just like, oh man, you know what? I'd get so over if I could just say the S or the F word. I mean, I'd be so much more over. Then you have no idea what gets people over. Like, if that's your frustration, then you are in the wrong business. You don't understand the business. I don't know. I mean, of course I'm not backstage. Of course I'd have wrestlers disagree with me here, but as a fan, I know what draws. I know what I'm interested in. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I know that that is what is the most important, is what's going to be the most money draw. What's the biggest draw? What are the fans going to watch? You see the SmackDown ratings also reflect those the Rock being there. I mean, so I don't want to hear it. Yeah, I mean, I'm battling with nobody here. But anyway, all right. I guess we'll wrap it there. Do you have any final thoughts or comments?
No, all to say is that kind of came in here maybe a touch negative, but after kind of talking it out, I really got more positive. So I'm looking forward to see the build that they have with No Rock on SmackDown. Like you said, that they've laid the groundwork already. So I'm interested to see them build towards Cody versus Roman and the rest of the stories that we kind of broke down.
Yeah, exactly. And also, don't forget, guys, the After Dark show this week was breaking down the WrestleManias from Anthony's childhood. So, I listened to part of that. I didn't get through yet, but very interesting. We all have WrestleManias. If you were a kid and watch wrestling, not all of you have, but that we all have those WrestleManias that are kind of synonymous with our childhood. And it was very interesting. And I'd really recommend you guys check it out, which, of course, is only available on the Patreon side of things or Apple Podcasts. So check that out. And thanks for joining me tonight. And we'll be chatting in another week.
Looking forward to it, man. Take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.